You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now is Rachel Stewart, writer, farmer, lover of falcons and guns. Have you got any girlfriends on the back of the truck, Rachel, or were you just going to jump on the back of the truck with me and we're going to take this for a lash around the paddock, eh?
Yeah, no gun-toting sisters with me today, mate. No, they were very metaphorical, actually, but, you know, that's how things roll.
It is how things roll. It's so good to catch up. And, you know, we've got a lot to talk about today, but one of the things that's really struck me in the little in the last little bit is with what's gone on. I think to myself, do you take a moment to think, does 2017 Rachel, would she have ever believed that now in 2024 that she'd be sharing a stage talking about some pretty weighty issues with the likes of Bishop Brian Tamaki?
No, no. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And it was great. It was fine. And we all just put all that stuff aside. It was very, very inspiring at Inflection Point. Yep.
Yeah, and I spoke to Di, the wonderful Di Landy, who also spoke. You know, do you feel that I don't believe something like Inflection Point would have been able to happen in New Zealand even 5 years ago, let alone now. So do you feel that a tide is turning, like that they've been able to gather people together to speak freely about these very, very important issues?
Well, I think the Posey Parker incident, you know, over a year ago, what happened there, and most of New Zealand saw that to some degree, and I think that it's that changed everything, and people wanted a chance to speak, and they weren't going to let it happen again. And the three guys that organised it, two of which will remain nameless, but Rhys Williams I had a lot to do with, and they were just determined to get this thing over the line, and everything that you could throw up to try and put them off doing it happened, as you know. I mean, Wellington City Council, Tory Farnow called them grotesque, you know, grotesque people coming to talk about, you know, anti-trans. You know, Brian Tamaki led the Wellington Post, said it was a Brian Tamaki led anti-trans summit. I mean, everything was thrown at it. It wasn't Brian Tamaki led. It was not at all. And it certainly wasn't anti-trans. We, you know, I think the religious people say hate the sin, love the sinner. And I think there's something to be said for that, because definitely we don't care about people being trans, but we certainly care about the medicalisation of children and what's happening with puberty blockers and what's happening with hormones and testosterone and what's happening with girls getting their breasts cut off, perfectly healthy breasts cut off. So it's not about not liking trans people. It's about what we're doing to children. And we all put our differences aside. Bob McCroskey was there, Brian Tamaki, and I really enjoyed sharing a room with them. And we really got this thing over the line. And those three gentlemen that organised it, I don't think anyone else could have done it. They were just determined. They're all self-employed. They're all very good at what they do in their own right. And they weren't going to let this stop them. And I'm really proud to have been involved, and I'm really thankful to them. They kept calm in the face of absolute drama and threats and bullshit and, you know, money that they had to cough up, something like 21 or 23K. They had to pay for stuff that we didn't even get or didn't even use. And so they just kept calm and kept doing what they had to do to get this over the line. So I'm really pleased about it.
Mm. I get the feeling that the cultural shroud that is surrounded not only New Zealand but a lot of other Western nations, which has kind of deflected any pushback with any of these issues, whether it be racism, whether it be gender, whether it be COVID, is starting to look a little bit threadbare, and it doesn't quite have the superpower that it once did for these activists. Do you feel that now, considering, you know, the journey you've been on over the last 6 or so years?
You know, some days I do. Some days I think yes, and other days I don't. I think you're right. I think certainly in Wellington we watched, the activists across the road with their flags, Palestinian flags, of course, because they've got to come out everywhere they go. That's what happens as well. I mean, they just conflate the two. They were stayed over in their lane, but Tory Farnow was over there with them. And then they tried to throw feces and urine at Brian Tamaki, but missed and got the three cops. The three cops went inside the building and had a shower, didn't arrest him as far as any of us saw. Brian Tamaki security tackled him. Do I think it's changing this? Well, it feels like it when you can have a thing like Inflection Point that brought all of us together. But, you know, they're just, and then Winston Peters, of course, is looking at introducing a bill so that government-owned buildings can't, you know, get to keep you out on the basis of your politics, which I think is awesome. So, yes, maybe. They're starting to look like absolute dicks, if I can use that word. But does that stop them? No, it doesn't. And I look at the culture wars, or the war on the Western culture, I should call it, the war on culture, and I think, is this just the beginning or are we getting to the end? Some days I'm unsure because this Marxist push, and I can't call it anything else but that really because that's what woke seems to be, is getting stronger and stronger in some ways. And of course, now we realise that the gender stuff, the you know, the trans stuff is so embedded, but it goes for a lot of things, in our systems, in our midwives, in our health system, in our counsellors, you know. Now the counsellors, you know, have to see trans people or else get, you know, or deal with these issues or get taken off the register. I mean, these things are happening every day. I hear about them, I see them, and I think to myself, unless we can break the system down in terms of how much it's got in there under the cloak of darkness, because a lot of people didn't really take this seriously for a long time, I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it. I think I think there's a shift, and a lot more people are on board with us. But the powers that be, and the Matt Ducey's of the world, and this national government, actually, are turning a blind eye to a lot of things. So it's very hard to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. It's amazing how the fear, because, I mean, you went through quite, and you talk about this actually in your Inflection Point video, and if anyone wants to see that, if they go across to, if you're on X, you can go to Inflection Point and access the videos from there, but I know that they're also on Rumble, and they're well worth a watch. Di Landy's speech was just wonderful. Yours was wonderful. There seems to be, and you talk about your cancellation with the story that you wrote and the emotions and the roller coaster that you went through. And, I mean, you were at the forefront of that, in this country at least. One of the things that I've noticed is that there seems to be a little less fear to stand up. So I'm thrilled to hear that it was three men that were creating this event and making sure that this event happened, because I know often I spoke to Josh Slocum from Disaffected recently, and one of the things he said was, "Is where are the men? We need to, you know, as men, we've got to also stand up in this, and we're not."
It was fun to deal with the men because it was a totally different sensation, because, first of all, I noticed that women get a lot more scared easily about being threatened, and because we don't have the same physical strength. But these men didn't give any quarter or any leeway to the threats that kept coming to them. And, in fact, they had to hand over, like I said, 8K, first of all, for security, and they hadn't even sold any tickets yet, so they handed over 8K. Of course, we didn't use security from the Takina Centre or Te Papa or whoever, because Brian Tamaki's boys were there and they just ran the thing. I mean, there was like 30 or 40 of them, and we felt totally safe with these guys. They just looked after us. They opened doors for us. They were just like good men. The security guys that were there just wanted to go outside and smoke fags and kind of just looked indifferent. So 8K for nothing. And then these men got told on the Thursday before the Saturday that they had to stump up another either 11 or 13, I can't remember, for the AV, all the audiovisual stuff, including the camera to film those things, those that you watched, our speeches. Of course, find out on the Friday, and they have to pay up front again. So we're now into over 20,000. And they get told on the Friday night, quite late in the evening, that they're not going to have it filmed. They weren't going to do it for us, but we'd paid this money, or well, not me, but them. And so Brian Tamaki said, oh, no problem, because Reese rang him. He said, I'll get my guy down from Auckland. They put him on a plane, and he was there the next morning, and he filmed everything. So really there's an absolute breach of contract there. But these men are serious businessmen, and they just They're not going to let this go either, I don't think. I can't speak for them, but I imagine there's something coming on that score, because what we were promised and what we had delivered were two different things. And they kept racking up the numbers to try and get us to back off and not have the thing, and these men just stood firm. So I got to say, there was something in these three self-employed guys doing their thing and just standing up to this, and it changed the game. And when they were having meetings with these Te Papa people and they're shaking and, you know, you can't possibly do this, as hate, and, you know, all this stuff was going on in the background, and they would just laugh at them and carry on. And that, we needed that. We really needed that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and that male energy. We needed it. And, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes sisters can't do everything. It's just the way it is.
And the whole manufactured grievance, which is created around this, particularly in those organisations, to actually see these guys persevere and push through. What was the mood on the ground? Because as you said, it's an unlikely group of people that have come together, but you've come together under primarily the cause of talking about gender and the medicalisation of our children, but also there was a free speech element very much embedded in that. What was the mood in terms of the interaction with everybody? I heard lots of laughter on the video. Was it nice to actually meet with these people face to face and just break bread and kōrero and just talk about a whole bunch of elements on common ground, even though that you may be theologically opposed or, you know, come from different backgrounds, but on this you were able to break bread and talk about things that you were all in agreeance. Was that a good feeling?
Oh, look, I got to say, and I said this to the guys too that ran it, I would put that, you know, I've been alive 61 years, I would put that in one of the top 10 days of my life, actually. The vibe was unreal. I have never felt such good humour in a room, such good feeling towards each other. I just, Bob McCroskey and I embraced each other as soon as we saw each other, because we know each other on Twitter and we've been dealing with each other that way. Brian Tamaki, what a guy. He's got charisma to burn. Got on with him like a house on fire. I thought he was great. His guys were great. His wife was great. They were good to deal with on this issue. I don't know about other issues. But this one, I think Brian Tamaki's doing a lot of good work. So there's that whole subject. But then there was, you know, Jan Rivers, for instance. Now, she is a good, I think she still thinks she's a Labour Party member, for instance. She thinks it hasn't expired yet. And then she proceeded to stand up and absolutely diss Labour and dismantle them and talk about all the things they've done to totally cock up this whole gender, this whole, you know, women's rights, really. It was superb. And then we had Ro Edge, of course, and Di Landy, who was outstanding. And Ro Edge does the sports stuff, so everybody was interested in that. There were people in that room from such diverse backgrounds. There were Maori athletes. There was destiny. There was religion. There was gay. There was straight. There was working class, a lot of working class, actually, I was interested to see, because working class people actually have some bloody sense. There was there was Joel McManus, apparently, from the spin-off. He was there in Subterfuge and wrote a horrible piece about it. He must have been in a different room from me. He's the Wellington editor of the spin-off, whatever. I can't even call that a media outlet, but whatever. He wrote it a horrible piece. I felt the vibe was fantastic. I walked away from that and the detransition of Mel. I mean, if you watch that, the detransition that flew over Mel Jeffries, flew over from Melbourne, and you have to watch that video of her take her top off, show you the absolute reality of what happens when you cut your breasts off and you self-harm and you do these horrible things. And then, you know, I watched Brian Tamaki and Bob McCroskey get up and pray over her, and she agreed because she's now a Catholic, because she's been through the mill, so she went back to Catholicism, and that's fine for her, and they asked if that was okay. That was so moving. Mm. This girl whose whole body is just misshapen and her boobs are gone. She's got fake nipples. The drugs have done a number on her. Then she broke down and talked about how she didn't fit before and now she doesn't fit now. You've really got to watch that video. It was electric in that room. And we all wanted to give her a hug. But those two men just got up there and they treated her like, you know, Brian Tamaki was saying, you're beautiful as you are. You know, Bob was talking about her purpose in life, and then under God, everybody has a purpose in life. And that resonated for a lot of us, actually, Christians and non-Christians. And they were like big brothers, and everyone needs one of those, don't they? So, and then the boys broke into a haka, a genuine haka, before we made them so cheap and trashy that they have no meaning anymore. This one was resonant. It was beautiful. And they gave her a haka, telling her she was a strong, powerful wahine, and it was moving. And I tell you, I burst into tears. A bunch of people did. There was a whole lot of people crying in that room.
Yeah,
because what we're watching is child abuse. We are watching child abuse in action every day in this country, and it's despicable to me.
Di reiterated that for her, that whole, because she asked Di to stay on stage with her and handed her her shirt, and Di just said the whole moment and just the whole outpouring of love. She said it was really moving. Yeah, and she said it was quite amazing. And you know what struck me here, and I've just written it down as you were talking, humanity.
Yeah.
All those protesters that were outside, and I think it was a little bit hyperbolic on the part of the media, on the numbers from the images that I've seen, that do you think that they've actually, their humanity has been replaced by indoctrination and they just don't realise it?
Oh, they're not happy people, and humanity isn't oozing out of them. It's, you're right. Humanity is the word, and I'm not a great person for hanging around with humanity. I like animals much, much more. But I'll tell you this. Like I said, it was one of my top 10 days ever, because that was a room full of people bonded on. We had the same project. We had the same determination, and there was a feeling of great love in that room. And it was almost, you know, if I was a Christian, I'd say God was in that room. So the only way I can really describe it, and I'm not a Christian, but, you know, I'm always open to persuasion, I guess, and the older you get, the more you think about these matters. But there was something in that room. Catherine Chua was the other one. She's a lovely Christian woman from Auckland who stood up to her school and said, you know, you're indoctrinating kids, and it ended up being about 100 people took their kids out. She's amazing. What a great speaker she is. So anyway, I missed her out. But my point is that there's no humanity across the road. I saw these people with their flags, all the usual suspects, you know, the Palestine flag and the, you know, just wearing pride colours. And, you know, I'm a gay woman, and I just feel absolutely sick every time I see the rainbow flag now, and I can't hammer that home enough anymore. And then, of course, when they had a go at Brian with somebody who'd saved up their clearly feces and urine human for, I mean, you could just smell it for, and they missed him because the security guys tackled him, like I said. That's not humanity. There's something really perverted about that, and those people are full of hate. That's not love. This rainbow community stuff and this hanging out and throwing things, you know, things at people, and the police don't even arrest them, that's so far from love, I don't know what to call that, but it's something else. It's horrible to watch.
Well, I think they like to call it virtue signalling.
I think they do, but there's nothing. I tell you what, throwing human wastage at people doesn't make you want to actually go and support the cause. I'm old-fashioned, like, that doesn't work for me.
No, it's, you know, it's funny. I'm a big proponent of manners, and we just were talking before we got started that, you know, I realised that you knew my uncle very well, and, you know, he is an old-school gentleman, and manners meant a tremendous amount to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can go a long way to rebuild the fabric of society with good manners and propriety.
Wouldn't it be good? But unfortunately, I think it's sort of dying out. It seems to be something that a lot of people don't have anymore, and I believe that, you know, manners get you a very long way.
Mm.
Well, they should. But anymore, we just abuse each other. It's just, you know, and throw things at each other. It's beyond my comprehension. We're living in an altered reality, really. It's very strange out there right now.
Mm. So Pride Month is now kicked off.
Oh, I know, just to cheer me up some more, thank you.
Yeah, you've got about, nearly 2.5-3 weeks to run yet. Started, Rachel. Strap in.
Thanks for reminding me. I just can't bear it. I see him outside the, you know, the councils. I don't know if Wanganui's is up, but I'm pretty sure it will be. I just feel like throwing up, really. It makes me sick, because they're using gay people like me to erase. We're getting erased. I mean, trans is everything. God knows what's going to happen next. The maps will be attached to it, the minor attracted persons, that's the next thing coming. The plus, 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 it's just too much. It just does my head in, and I'm not alone. There's so many of us. No one hears us. No one cares. This rainbow community is not a community, and nobody owns bloody rainbows, so give them back. So, you know, whatever we think of Brian Tamaki, for instance, painting over the rainbow crossings, I say good job, man.
And it's so sad because, you know, there has been a tremendous amount of work done in, you know, in the early stages and particularly in the 70s. You know, I've got a couple of very good friends who were at the forefront of homosexual law reform, and they're into their 60s now. And they just despair at this. They look at all of this. And you know, these were guys that used to be right involved with Auckland Pride and all of this stuff. Now they're like, oh, we couldn't think of anything worse. They just have seen the intention of the entire movement completely turned upside down. And I know that one of the Landies has voiced this as well in regards to Māori issues, is it's almost like we're going backwards, that all gains that were made by Māori, who were made by gays and lesbians, are now, it's almost like you're throwing them back into the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's worse than growing up in the 70s, at least in the 70s, me growing up. I was at Whanganui Girls College in the 70s, and I can remember people saying to me at parties, you know, don't like you, you're a lesbian. I'd say, oh, that's fine, carry on and have another beer. You know, I just didn't care. It was, people were just honest, but it didn't feel malevolent and it didn't feel awful, and it felt like we could only go up, you know. And I've never been involved in pride parades or anything. It's just not my nature. I'm not radical about these matters, but not saying it's radical, but I just never got involved in that stuff. But it did get better, and then it got to the point where we were totally ignored for our sexuality. Maybe a decade ago it was looking good, and then trans got their talons into everything, got the funding, and then, you know, we got gay marriage, which I think was probably a bit of a slippery slope, actually, in retrospect. I didn't care either way about it. I'd never do it. I think that's for heterosexuals. I'm old-fashioned like that. It's not. We are different. I don't know why we wanted to do that, but whatever. What I think is that there was nothing else to fight for once we got it. And, you know, that's when the trans saw their opportunity. And now the maps are getting their opportunity going. And we're all supposed to feel sorry for pedophiles and minor attracted persons, folks. I mean, it's unreal. And we're supposed to feel sorry for them. The left tells us that they don't act on these impulses. Most of them don't do it. I don't care. I don't want them. If you attach that to the LGBTQI, whatever, I just want to die. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. The whole thing is kink. It's perversion. It's turned into something that it was never meant to be. And I find it very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I've just actually finished reading Trans by Helen Joyce after I interviewed her.
Great book. Great book.
It's an amazing book. And I tell you what, if anyone out there is hearing all this stuff around trans and gender and you want a single volume that will explain everything from woe to go, with the history, how it happened, all the different elements, how just the simplest studies or single people, this is what amazed me, is single people in history who may have done one set of experiments or written one paper that was very fringe that has been latched onto and then put through an academic laundering mill to create what is they like to call as hard science now. It's really quite mind-blowing how flimsy the entire premise is.
Absolutely. And you're right, that is the best book on the subject, partly because Helen Joyce's voice is so non-judgmental. Mm. It is just, it's good-humoured. She's not trying to vilify anybody. She's also not running both sides of the argument, because actually there isn't two sides to this one, really. And I think it's the best book for anybody to get. Helen Joyce, Trans, I totally recommend it. And I've lent it to so many people myself just to give them an overview of how this, you know, even the drag queen stuff gets covered, which is a whole nother issue.
The element too with language, because I really am quite fascinated with the whole language concept. And I've spoken to Sarah Henderson from Manawahine Kōrero around the manipulation of language in regards to the Midwifery Council guidelines. But it was the manipulation of language, and Helen being both a mathematician and a journalist and writer, covered that so beautifully. And there was a point that she made that really resonated with me, was around the use of gendered language and how women are being erased in the language because all feminine language has disappeared. But she said, you don't notice the masculine language being erased. That is allowed to remain.
Chest feeding, yeah. It's incredible. And, you know, this is as much a argument against medicalization of people and children and the fact that biology trumps all, as much as it is an argument, it's a linguistic argument and a free speech argument too, because, I mean, the way most people get drawn into this, or at least me, was realizing you couldn't say anything or you're going to get shut down. But the language stuff fascinates me, how they just bastardized the language around it. And everyone says, you know, what's your gender? No, what's your sex? That's the question, not gender. And now everybody uses the term gender for sex. And they've kind of conflated it, and people think gender is sex, and it isn't. And, you know, if I'm in a, yeah, anyway, it's people ask, they have forms everywhere to fill out, you know, when you go and do something, and now it's, you know, how which gender do you identify, you know, at with? Well, that's not the, I just cross the whole thing out and write sex all over it, because it's not the issue. You know, it's not about how you identify. It's not about your delusions, honey. It's about, so using gender was very clever by the trans lobby in getting people to conflate gender with sex, because gender is cultural, socially cultural.
Yeah, which again is where the Marxist element comes in, yes. Because they turn everything around. I mean, the definitions, I've actually, from where I'm sitting right now, I've got two huge big dictionaries sitting there, which when I moved my parents, we moved my parents to a retirement community and were cleaning up, and there were these dictionaries, and they're published about 40-odd, 50-odd years ago. And I thought, I'm going to take those. Because unless you have those in old school printed copy, you can't go back and actually look at the definitions that have changed, like racism, like vaccine, mis and disinformation. You know, I love those, misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation, you know, which are rumours, lies, and the inconvenient truth. You know, it's just full of what they are. The new one I saw actually in the papers over the weekend in regards to the Manyariwa Marae, it looks like there's a little bit of a sticky wicket going on with Mr. Tamahere. And there was a word used there that I saw several times, and it's popped up a lot in the last week or so, which is the word activation.
Okay.
Activation. And the word, so they had the day of activation, what is it, Te Tiriti, which was John's daughter and Brawiri's wife and all that crew. Yeah. And that was the day of activation. And then they had when they were collecting data for census and to switch people across to the Māori role, which they were doing simultaneously. And they had vouchers and giving away all sorts of things, both at the Manurewa Marae. They were also doing it via the Waiparere Trust. And they were calling that an activation campaign. And when in an interview with Andrea Vance, one of the sources said they felt quite sorry for Pene Herere, that he really didn't have a chance to win because he didn't get out there and activate the same way that Tash did.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, in my day, it was called a bribe, darling, but obviously activates the new thing.
Yeah. Yeah, backhander. Now it's activation. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't notice that. Good pickup. I will look for that more. I guess activation is what you say when you're about to start a revolution.
Well,
really? Which it feels like we're kind of, you know, there's something going on here.
2024 was always, I think, going to be one of those years. I mean, we had our election switch at the end of the year, but you've got the Brits now have announced their date, what, for 4th of July. Weird date, Rishi. I don't know why you went there, but anywho. You've got with what's going on there. You've got with the hoo-ha that happened up in the Scottish Parliament, and there's been lots of shenanigans there. The Americans, well, I mean, what a shit show that is. I mean, Lord only knows what's going to happen in November there. South Africa is an absolute basket case. I've got someone sending me some really interesting stuff out of South Africa, and it's just, you know, it's completely corrupt and upside down, and things are trying to get sort of righted there, but it's been a basket case there for years. About the only stability has been the Indians, and it looks like that Modi's going to get back with an even bigger majority than he had in this previous two elections. But there's lots of, Yeah, there is definitely a lot of upheaval, and I understand these convoys now of farmers going across Europe, and there's all sorts beginning to happen.
Yes, it's getting very worrying out there, isn't it? It's. Mm. I think the war on our culture, the Western world, is in full steam ahead, and I think someone's following some very close manual of the Marxist doctrine. It certainly feels that way. There's certain things that they're doing, and we're trying to normalise this weird stuff that's happening all around us, and it's ostensibly a lot of it's done by language and infiltrating our systems, and I think we're well on the way. I think I don't know what the next stage is, but it isn't feeling good, Marie, is it?
No. No, a lot of it, though, too, I think, is about, me as a parent, you know, having those moments that if you can actually see something that you can gently nudge back on to actually say, you know, no, for me, that's not working for me and my son, my daughter. And I spoke to Fern Hickson the other day, and she's with Resist Gender Education, the spokesperson now. And, yeah, she said there's a lot of work there and there's a lot of resources. And I think it's like the dads, especially, we just have to actually be a little bit more proactive now, be a wee bit braver, show a bit more courage.
We need to be, I don't know, I guess I feel like we've been too liberal for too long. Maybe I'm just becoming all the things like the trans activists call me, but I feel that the Western world has been so complacent on so many issues that we could have been the adults in the room and we haven't done it. And now we've got a situation where I don't see, I keep waiting for Luxon, for instance, our lovely Prime Minister, to... And, you know, he has a lot of good traits. He's very personable and he gets on with people. But when's he going to push back and say, no, sorry, what's happened at the Waiparata Trust is not okay and what's happening with John Tamahiri isn't good and we're going to have to look at this? But he says nothing. He says nothing about the trans thing. He says nothing about anything. He said, you know, there's so many opportunities for him to talk about the culture wars in more detail, but he doesn't want us to think it's happening.
No, well, he is a shiver looking for a spine to run up.
He but really he's, is. He's a globalist, isn't he? Yeah. He's a real globalist.
I can't quite decide, and I've voiced this before, and I really can't quite figure out whether or not he's playing the political and corporate political game or globalist political game, and he's sitting back and he's sort of delegating that to the likes of David Seymour and Winston, who don't seem to mind rolling their sleeves up, throwing the red bands on and wading into the cultural muck.
Mm. Mm. He really is just staying out of trouble as much as he can. But the bottom line is that, you know, I didn't vote for him anyway, but I never will, because it looks like he's going on to the next thing anyway. I mean, it's like he's looking ahead and he just wants everyone to...
He's passing through.
He's a CEO, and it's almost like he's got the globalist playbook from the WEF to me, and he's just he knows exactly what to do. And I think the day I realised who he really was the day he kind of lied about the fact that he didn't even know he tried to make it. He didn't even know who the WEF were, and he'd already been through their little system. He knows exactly who they are. He and Jacinda Ardern have been through that whole, you know, thing. And so he lied. And I thought to myself, well, why are you saying that when you clearly know who Klaus Schwab is, you clearly know what happens in Davos, and you've clearly been indoctrinated in that. And he lied about it. So that was the moment, really, for me.
Mm. So what about all of this sort of unfolding scandal with all roads leading back to Tamahere? Do you think that will now come to complete fruition? I have to admit, I was heartened to see that very good article from Andrea Vance. She'd done some good work there.
Yes.
And to see it in, you know, one of our biggest newspapers was like, whoa, okay. Because he has managed to get himself quite the Māori Messiah type status.
Mm. Mm. Or, you know. Yeah, I was heartened. Of course, it'll be called racism no matter what happens. And we all know it's not. There's been concerns about JT for a very long time. And, you know, just the fact that he called women front bums when he was in Parliament under Labor, which I didn't take very kindly to. And then the Roastbusters scandal where he was He and Willie Jackson were asking that woman when she lost her virginity. And then, of course, there was also the cats he left behind at that rental property. If you can remember, about 10 years ago, he left two or three cats behind. They had to be he just didn't take them with him to his new pad, and they had to be put down because of feline HIV. And he just said, "Oh well, you know, well, whatever." You know, I think those signs indicate a man who's not very nice. So now we have things that are really becoming concrete. I think he's broken so many laws it makes Trump look like an innocent lamb with his court case, because that was so political, it's obvious. So I think he's going to go down. But there we have his daughter, who could easily just step up to the plate and carry on, I guess. But it's very hard. You've got to watch, though, that I watched a lot of people gloating about John Tamahiri, and I get it. And we're all outraged, but you've got to watch that you don't just get into hating on him for no, you know, we've got to have the facts. We've got to know what's going on. It's not about feels. And it certainly looks like a massive smoking gun. But until we get the goods, I guess we've got to be a bit careful. But I think they're there, and I think they're going to get them, the goods.
Yeah, and I know, as you said, you know, there's a lot of files that go back a long time.
Oh, yes.
And it will be interesting to see whether, you know, whether there is an appetite to actually investigate thoroughly to see whether there is something there to answer for. And I'm with you. I'll be very, very intrigued to see what sort of happens there, because there was a Substack that was written by someone that worked for him for a year, and I thought that was really interesting, reading that Substack about sort of the cult of personality that was within that organisation, because, you know, that's the thing. You don't want to hate on all the really incredibly good people that actually work in the organisations around the likes of the Waipareta Trust and around the Marae, and because there are some really amazing people. Again, Josh Slocum, that I mentioned before, he talks about culture wars in the terms of people with cluster B personality disorders, and I think John is an absolute prime candidate for a narcissistic personality disorder.
Well,
for
tell
sure.
Me about cluster B. What do you know about cluster B?
So cluster B personality disorders are the ones that fall into are narcissistic personality disorder, dissociative personality disorder. What are the other two? It'll come to me in a minute. And they tend, and the people that have these so some people talk about sort of elements of psychopathy, which fall into this as well, and they tend to be people that are very charismatic, that are able to have leadership skills but are very, very manipulative, and they often crop up in places of leadership, politics, and media. So a classic overt narcissist, for example, would be Donald Trump. Classic overt narcissist. So when you actually look at the world through the lens of somebody with a cluster B personality disorder, you can actually then see where the manipulation lies. And they themselves don't actually necessarily see that they're doing anything wrong.
Yeah, well, he definitely has got charisma, John. And people obviously follow him with great gusto. And he has a lot of loyal people to him no matter what. But the bottom line is, yeah, break the law. We're still one country as far as I know, and we still have one law. And I think you're right, though. There's definitely something going on there in terms of how he swaggers about, and he's fairly narcissistic. But there's so many of these people around, I get them all mixed up. There's so many. They're all out there doing their thing. So it's very hard to know.
No, you know? It certainly is. It certainly is. So we'll have to just wait and see, I guess, and
we'll
see.
Have to wait and see, but I really do hope there's an appetite for it, because we have to see that the law applies to all of us equally. I mean, I make a tweet and they come and take my guns off me, and it was a joke tweet and everyone knew it. So I want to see. This is electoral law. This is the fact that this is happening. The census, and I don't think people are lying about that. They're not making that up. They've got no reason to, apart from he says they've got gripes. You're talking about the vaccine information. He's feeding it into a database. He's been very open and honest about the fact that he thinks Maori should have their own information. But then he denies that any of this is happening. And
the only thing that I held any respect for Dr. Ashley Bloomfield over was the fact that he resisted John's movement and legal movements to relinquish the names of unvaccinated Māori to the Waipareta Trust so he could target them to get them vaccinated. And Ashley Bloomfield said, no, that is a bridge too far. And I thought, yes, Ashley, it is a bridge too far. There's plenty of bridges that you've burnt, but at least you were able to see that this one is a bridge too far.
I remember that quite clearly. Yeah. So John's on record for wanting to do this, and he's clearly done it. It's just a matter of putting them through it to I think otherwise we'll never trust our elections again, and I certainly don't trust the census, and who would ever fill it out again on the basis of that information being used like that, let alone the fact that the census was ridiculous anyway.
Well, that's a whole Rāwhiti is jumping up and down and saying that they want to create a breakaway parliament based on the 20%, 17.4 Rāwhiti, let's not get away with ourselves here, who identify as Māori. It's just like, well, hold on a second here, Sunshine. A, identify as Māori, not necessarily are Māori. B, not what makes you think that all 17.4% want to go along with you? Because according to
the election,
because
I know a lot of Pākehā that lied on the census about they said they were going to lie about being Māori. I heard people say it. So we can't even trust the census now, Marie. So what's the point?
No.
You know, we don't trust it. I don't trust it. So it's, you know, I mean, it's run by a bunch of bureaucrats and it clearly doesn't work. So, And so back to the revolution that Kili Tamahiri Waititi wants to have, and that video that she made, and Waititi himself and Deborah Ngā Wairarapaka, and what do you think? I mean, you know, do you think would New Zealand be better with a Māori parliament? I mean, I keep thinking, am I just being a racist? But I keep coming back to the fact that you just can't separate it out. We know what happens when you do that. It just doesn't, it's not going to work if you have two different laws of the land.
If Māori wanted that, you would see more voices doing it. And I just look back at the voting numbers, and the voting numbers are minuscule, but you have a very loud, powerful group. And they, in traditional Māori culture, most humble, genuine Māori do not, I mean, they just want to be with their whānau. They just want to have, you know, raise their mokopuna, spend time with the tamariki. They want to, you know, be with their communities. They just want to and be part of their wider fabric. They're not interested in all of this. And I mean, I just speak to so many that I know, particularly here out here on the East Coast. And as one of my old aunties said, ugh, it's a whole bunch of hoo-ha. They're not interested.
Right. So I don't know where they think they got the numbers from, and they're just going to turn everyone off. But the problem is they've painted themselves into a pretty radical corner. And I don't know how you come out of that corner really from there. And to be honest, if you're talking insurrection, which is exactly what we're talking about, shouldn't they actually, they swore allegiance to the king, even though there was a whole bunch of drama about that, but they did. So why doesn't Luxon say something? Why don't we set up a panel of independent people to look at whether they should stay in parliament? Because he didn't even go in for the budget, these people. They were outside on the forecourt protesting with the kākoi. So, you know, these are activists. They're not politicians. They're activists. And if they're going to talk open insurrection, are we not? Well, we got rid of the Jacinda got rid of the sedition laws. So what next? Was it Jacinda or Helen? Anyway, one of them got rid of them.
I always look at it, I call it the saloon door principle, and that if you were to place the same behaviours on people who sit on either a political or ideological opposite, would the reaction be the same? Or what would the reaction be?
I think we can figure that one out pretty quickly, eh?
Exactly. And so that to me is my yardstick for all of this. And it's again comes back down to manners and civility, and how do you start creating discussions? I mean, I personally think for Māori, a lot of the growth and healing for Māori will actually come back through faith. I really do believe that. I think faith made a tremendous difference to Māori back in the 1800s. It actually saw them lift themselves out of poverty. They had some of the best literacy and numeracy rates. They had some of the most stable marriage rates and stable families in this country. And I think if people are looking at their situations now and they're thinking, gosh, you know, how do we get our families out of these dire housing situations, out of these dire gang situations and cultural situations, I think faith is the way to go. When you look at when faith is combined with a strong community marae input, success and growth happens. And, you know, that's where, that's the space I know that the Tamaki's, they saw that way back in the 80s when they created Destiny Church. And there are plenty of other faith-based elements. Now, you know, I'm like you. I'd like to call myself faith adjacent. So I don't personally hold it, but I completely understand, respect it, and have my kids at faith-based schools. And yeah, it's, I think that, that if there is a solution for people that are struggling, I think that that's a pretty good solution for them.
I agree. And I think what was fascinating about Inflection Point got me thinking a lot prior to and after was, you know, the scaffolding of the Christian faith is now being stripped apart in the Western world. And we're not better for it at all. And I'm not saying you can just go off and believe in Christianity without thinking that, you know, Jesus sent down his only son to die on the cross. You have to kind of believe that's the basic, you know. But if you, but putting that aside, which is pretty hard to do, but faith has made the Western world what it is, and it's pretty bloody good. There's lots of things about the Western world that we need, and I think that everybody, not just Māori, could look again. And there is a renaissance. I've been talking to a number of ministers lately. Funnily enough, I have friends who are ministers, reverends and vicars, and they're saying there's a massive resurgence going on in their churches right now. And I think, you know, the rise of Islam is getting everyone a little bit freaked out in Europe, and it's very fast, and Sharia law doesn't look that far away when you see these mayors of London being elected that are calling out Allah Akbar. And, you know, so England's dying in its own way, and that's the home of, you know, the Enlightenment, or not the Enlightenment, but at least the home of where we all come from, us, well, me, colonists. It's the home of Western values, and people, it's unrecognisable. There are people just saying that Britain now is, people that travel there are saying it's not even what it was 5 years ago, let alone 20. So I went, last time I was in Britain was many decades ago, and I can't imagine what it's like now. But we've all got some problems, and I think we need Christian voices now more than ever. And I've learnt to not be so cocky about initially being an atheist and then being an agnostic, and now I don't know. You know, and you learn with age too that, you know, it pays to actually have faith in something. It can't just be, you know, a bottle of gin or a, you know, I don't know. You've got to have faith in something. And I think the world is bigger than we see with our own eyes. And so I think for a lot of people it is the answer. And the Western world needs to embrace it pretty quickly at this point.
Mm. Well, as Qui-Gon Jinn once said to Obi-Wan Kenobi, there's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish. That's right. So I never thought I'd say these things. And like you asked me before, back in 2017, would I have thought I'd sit down in a room with Bob McCoskey and Brian Tamaki? I would have just, but you know, it didn't matter. We all were there for the greater good because we all care about those kids.
Mm.
And I don't understand how parents are just allowing this to happen. I just don't understand it.
No, and I'm very much on the fact that as parents, you know, a lot of parents, there's so many busy parents out there, but we've, as a working mum, being a full-time working mum the whole time that I've been raising my boys, one of the things that I've learned that there are some things you can't abrogate, and you need to stay. I have given headaches to school principals the length and breadth of Hawke's Bay. I think when my boys matriculate out from the schooling system, there will be some very happy school administrators and principals out there.
Well, I think people should be involved in their kids' education, and, you know, and that means fronting up and saying, oh, look, I'm not happy about this to principals and boards of trustees. And you know, why else? Otherwise they're just a babysitting service, aren't they?
Yeah, indeed.
I can't speak. I don't have children, but I have enough nieces and nephews to know that, you know, it pays to actually keep keep in touch with what, and also what they're being taught, because we all know that they're still teaching that, you know, RSE stuff, the sexuality guidelines that Winston's trying to put the kibosh on, or at least Tanya Ungovich is very involved into the toilet bill that's been introduced in the unisex toilet. So New Zealand First is the only one trying, but boy, I think they're up against it because everything seems to be in slow-mo.
Well, and this is the thing, you know, it all of it came in under stealth, and it came in under stealth for a very, very long time, and that's the problem. It's going to take a while to undo all of this, and it is just, you know, and I feel because, you know, a lot of kids are going to go through the system and be irreversibly damaged, as to quote as Abigail Schreier, another great book. But, you know, we just have to do what we can do. And, keep having courageous conversations. Keep, you know, keep talking, keep understanding, keep, you know, every now and then putting the hand up, being the grown up in the room and just going, you know what,
No. Peter says no.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, look, Rachel, it is always good to catch up. I always thoroughly enjoy it. This has been Rachel Stewart here on Counterculture with Reality Check Radio. Don't disappear, because the theme is going to continue. I'm catching up with Karina Shields next, and you know that our auntie Hey Hey is going to have a word or two to say about all things Waipareta. So strap in for that one. It's going to be an absolute burner. So don't disappear for that. Thank you again, Rachel, for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.